HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.
Okay, so today I am joined by Mags Gribben. Mags is Head of Diversity, Equity and Inclusion with Irish Life Group, and Barbara O'Malley, who is Head of People Experience Ireland for Irish Life Group. Guys, you're very welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
Doing great, Declan. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a million for having us. Really looking forward to the conversation, Declan.
Me too. Great, great to have you here. Barbara, I'm going to go straight to you. As Head of People Experience in Ireland, the focus on diversity and inclusion has clearly changed in the last decade or so in Ireland. What's your observations of it? What's changed? Why do you think, you know, what's driven those changes?
It's a good question. I think there's been a few factors that have driven the change, and it has changed quite significantly over the last decade, as you've said. Like, firstly, like, information is so much more accessible for us all. Like, you know, you get information through your iPhone, like that's just exploded. But that, coupled with the fact that we're having more open, honest conversations, and I feel that's really driven by the generational shift. Like, we are Gen Z are very much more active and vocal, and they're really leading and driving the way. And, you know, I talk to Mags about this all the time. You know, we're having conversations, and traditionally taboo conversations, that we wouldn't have had, you know, a decade ago or two decades ago. Like, a very simple example, I was in the gym with my instructor, and he started talking to me about the menopause and the fact that I was of that age, and had a full-blown conversation. And I'm embarrassed to say, Declan, he knew a hell of a lot more about it than I did, but I learned a lot from the conversation. But I walked away thinking, isn't that amazing? That wouldn't have happened even 3-5 years ago, in my opinion. So that's one factor. But the other thing then is, you know, it makes good business sense. You know, investors are walking away from organizations that don't have a very clear ESG agenda. You know, so they're looking for organizations to have that firmly embedded in their agendas going forward. And, you know, all the research would point to the fact that if somebody can bring their true authentic self to work and work in an environment that's psychologically safe, they are going to be highly engaged. They are going to be more productive. And that drives better outcomes for them as an individual from a well-being perspective, but also it drives better business and customer outcomes. So it's just really, really important thing to do. And you don't have to look too far back in history to see the negative consequences of having a lack of diversity or not having a psychologically safe environment. The financial crisis, all of the research around that pointed to those being key factors in the financial crisis. So it makes complete sense, and it's the right thing to do, Declan, I would say. I don't know if Mags wanted to add anything.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Barbara. I agree with everything you've said. I really think, like, in the last 10 years, it's moved from a nice to have to a need to have. It's a strategic business imperative now. I mean, the business case is proven. We know all the research out there on the impact on high-performing teams, on financial targets. So it's a core strategic imperative. You know, it really has moved in that direction. I also think how it's moved, I think the focus is also shifting from internal DEI to external DEI. So the work that we're doing in our community, the work that we're doing to really kind of drive that external impact on D&I, I think we're really seeing that shift as well.
Yeah, and even it just sort of strikes me as I introduced you, the pair of you know, and what we'd be talking about today, even the fact that organizations now have a head of, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, or a head of people experience, I think that tells its own tale in itself. Mags, what does a truly diverse and inclusive organization look like?
Yeah, I think that it's a really interesting question, Declan. I think it's really important to note that there isn't really an endpoint as such. Like, driving inclusion, it's very much a journey, or really a direction that we work towards rather than an end destination. So D&I to me is really broad, it's constantly evolving, and it's very nuanced in nature. So fundamentally, in an inclusive workplace, everyone is treated equally with dignity and respect and afforded equal opportunities. Work in an environment of equity where everyone starts with equal access to all of those opportunities. But what it would feel like, to me, a truly inclusive and diverse organisation is, in essence, Barbara, what you said earlier on, where people feel valued for who they are, one where it would feel like difference is supported, welcomed and celebrated. I think as an organisation, it would be where people feel safe and comfortable to bring their whole selves to work, to be able to express themselves in a way that is authentic without fear of judgment, and where people feel that they really belong, feel connected to their workplace and people around them. I think what we'd see, Declan, is we'd see that the workplace would be reflective of the societies, communities and customers of which we serve. And I think D&I would be seamlessly integrated into the business and the day-to-day. So that D&I is really part of the organization's DNA. And a D&I lens would be applied to all elements, embedded into all policies and procedures and all elements of the employee lifecycle, from talent acquisition, development, succession planning, performance management, etc. And then lastly, I think in terms of behaviours, what we'd be seeing is that D&I is everybody's responsibility in a truly inclusive organisation. We all have an active role to play in diversity and equity and inclusion. And it really shouldn't be seen over here as an isolated HR initiative, but very much leader-led, leader-owned and leader-driven. And then in terms of behaviours, I think senior leader role modelling is really important, where leaders are actively demonstrating inclusive leadership behaviours consistently. And Barbara, you've already mentioned this, but I think in particular, psychologically safe environments is a really core element of diverse and inclusive organisations. And really leading to that, I think leaders expressing vulnerability with their teams is an important way to build trust and psychologically safe environments, where it makes it safe for others and gives permission for others to do the same. And Barbara and I were on a webinar last week and something really struck me about it. There was one quote: around 61% of the general population can cover up aspects of themselves, and this figure can rise when part of a minority group. So again, feeling comfortable and safe to be who you are at work is a critical component of a psychologically safe environment and an inclusive team organisation.
So I think we can agree it can be a lofty ambition for some organisations to truly get there. I know you, like many other companies, have been on the particular journey. What sort of process did you follow to get there, or how does an organisation get there? I mean, you mentioned a few elements of an employee's life cycle, but how did you guys approach it in terms of process?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And we've been on a journey, as you say there, Declan. So diversity and inclusion is really at the heart of everything we do in Irish Life and Canada Life. I've already mentioned before, it's a core strategic imperative. And we've made significant progress in our journey over the last kind of number of years. But we've come a long way, but we've got more to do. But I think what's really helped us on our journey is that we've been evidence-based and data-led from the outset. And maybe some insights into our specific journey. Back in 2019, we conducted an independent assessment of our D&I climate and culture, led by two DCU researchers. And through this survey and through this research piece, we learned of the extensive need to provide a wider range of support for employees with all forms of unique requirements. And that led then to, in 2020, we devised and developed a campus-wide D&I strategy and action plan with clear measures of success and KPIs, and that really helped us. And this strategy and action plan, it falls under three pillars: inclusive leadership and accountability, D&I business integration, and D&I data optimization. Maybe just briefly outlining what we're covering under each of those pillars. Inclusive leadership and accountability is all around integrating inclusive leadership traits, themes and assessment into all areas of our employee life cycle. And then business integration is ensuring that we continue to embed D&I throughout our business. And our voluntary led employee resource networks are really core to this. And then lastly, strategic data is all around leveraging and driving the collection and tracking of D&I data to really measure our impact and to inform our future initiatives. For example, we introduced gender balance goals at senior levels in our organisation, and we regularly track progress against our achievement of these goals. But underpinning this, I think what really helped us is the work that we do across our voluntary-led employee resource groups. And these groups are really much, they're led by voluntary advocates from across our organisation who are really come together to drive change and support an area that they feel really, really passionate about. And I think what's really helped us on our journey is that all of our work across D&I, we have strong executive sponsorship and we cultivate expert external partnerships to inform our approach. So our employee resource groups, we've got five of them, Declan, in total. Two well-established are Women at Work and Pride and Diversity, and then three new ones that we introduced at the beginning of last year. So our Women at Work ERG is around supporting, empowering and connecting women. Our Pride and Diversity is around driving LGBT plus representation and inclusion. Our Family Life is around creating an inclusive workplace for families. And then our AIBA Life is around creating that accessible and inclusive employee experience. And then lastly, our Ethnicity is around celebrating differences in ethnicity and culture. So in summary, our D&I programme, it's very much strategically aligned with our ethos around helping people build better futures. So our programme is all around future-proofing our workforce. So that's a bit of an insight into our journey.
Sure.
But I think what's really helped us, Declan, is like that kind of coherent integrated and collaborative approach to managing and processing our agenda, the evidence-based, data-led, scientific approach I talked about, and developing that D&I strategy with a clearly defined action plan and measurement.
Mags, I'm really interested on the KPI data element of that. What other sort of KPIs could you share with us that are what that would you recommend to other organizations in terms of what they should be tracking?
Yeah, sure. So I think tracking any kind of core demographic data that you have in your organization to inform your approach, I think can be really helpful. So getting an insight into your current demographic, so that will highlight kind of any gaps and highlight any then talent acquisition strategies that you want to implement to try to really kind of recruit that kind of diverse pipeline of talent. So I think that tracking is really important. Tracking any gender balance goals that you have in your organization is really important, but also tracking D&I sentiment in terms of what people are feeling or in terms of what people want from a D&I strategy or a D&I initiative. Like we have a very strong caring employers program. We partner with Family Carers Ireland and we're really proud of that relationship. But we wanted to learn, what do our people want from a caring employers program? So we conducted a whole wide survey, getting an insight into those that have caring responsibilities in our organization or those that would see caring in their future, to really learn what would a program be helpful in terms of kind of giving that support. So in other words, we were able to develop bespoke, tailored content. So I would say really surveying your employees regularly, really finding out what is helpful for them, I think is really, really important. But also really looking at your take up on your initiatives, who's attending your programs, and the feedback that you're getting from those, I think is really, really important as well.
Yeah, that's really,
I think it's also important to say, sorry, Declan, that we have really strong executive sponsorship on all of our initiatives, and we've got really strong sponsorship from our CEO, who chairs our D&I council. So those networks are really important in driving your agenda forward.
Yeah, I think without the top level sponsorship, it can be hard to get these things over the line. You mentioned along the way there, Mags, about supports and policies to you know, help foster this diverse and inclusive culture. What sort of supports and policies have you either implemented or amended to reflect that?
Yeah, thank you. So this is something that we're really proud of. In our approach, as I said earlier on, just as we help our customers prepare for the future, we're really committed to supporting our employees' individual life cycles and circumstances. So we've actually just recently introduced a series of Life Matters policies supporting our people in moments that matter in their lives. So really, our latest launch of policies is around supporting people as they navigate their work and lives. These initiatives were designed by our colleagues and for our colleagues, and they're a continuous focus on our D&I practices and strategies. And I think the policies that we've just implemented really go towards building that culture of openness and breaking down taboos and combating stigma. So our policies comprise of 9 that we've just launched over 9 months. So maybe just a very brief insight into them. Our first one, which we launched last September, is our Family Carers Policy. And we know from national statistics and from working with Family Carers Ireland that 52% of carers juggle work with caring responsibilities. So our policy offers 5 days of paid leave to care for a dependent family member. And as I said, we partner with Family Carers Ireland, who we also partner with on our Caring Employers Programme. We've also introduced a menopause policy. So Barbara has mentioned some of the conversations around menopause. But again, the research shows that 59% of women experience menopause, report a negative impact on their working career. So our policy provides workplace adjustments and flexibility. And we partnered with the Menopause Hub in that regard. We've also launched a fertility policy, giving paid leave to those experiencing going through a fertility journey. We're very proud of our domestic violence and abuse policy that we launched in collaboration with Women's Aid. This policy required the most training in terms of raising our awareness on what support we would need to give. And as we know, this is very much a sensitive and prevalent societal issue. So our policy provides 10 days of paid leave to anyone experiencing domestic violence and abuse, as well as significant training for people responding to disclosures. We then introduced the pregnancy loss policy, which provides 10 days of paid leave to anyone who experiences pregnancy loss, and also paid leave to a partner. We have also launched an extended and enhanced compassionate leave policy, a right to disconnect and working away policy. And then lastly, we've launched our ninth policy, which is our surrogacy leave policy, mirroring our maternity and adoptive leave policies. So they're just our latest launch of policies, and we're really proud of those. They're very much based on feedback from our people in terms of what supports them as they navigate their working lives.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, all of them are fantastic initiatives.
Getting buy-in on your people strategy can often be challenging, but it doesn't have to be. At Irish Life Health, we help HR leaders to unlock insights and make data-driven HR decisions. Join over 2,500 HR leaders who partner with us to help their employees live a healthier life. Search Irish Life Health to find out more. Irish Life Health Act is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Barbara, employee experience. Obviously, if you have a hugely diverse workforce and you're trying to scale all of those great things that Mags was talking for, how do you, can you meaningfully do it? Can you meaningfully scale this stuff? And if so, what are the pitfalls? What do you need to watch out for as you do it?
Yeah, I'm the eternal optimist, Declan, so I think you can scale. And to be quite honest, you know, Mags has talked about it already there, all of the data and the insights that we've been gathering over the last number of years. So I think if you can leverage data, and there's loads of data points across the organization, even some business data that can give you insights into how people are experiencing the workplace, and harness technology, you can absolutely, you know, scale it and personalize it to a point, obviously. And I think, you know, with the advent of AI, we might even get more and more sophisticated in that personalization. But that's very much a journey that we, like a lot of organizations, are on. But some organizations are a little bit more progressed in that. And I've had conversations only in the last week with regard to some of the potential pitfalls from learning from other people's experience. Obviously, you need the investment and the right skills to be able to do this and do it well. And obviously, you're dealing with very, potentially sometimes very sensitive data. So you need to obviously act in a responsible, but also if you're using AI, quite an ethical way. And then the biggest pitfall for me is ensuring that, you know, when you gather those insights, that you actually do something with them as an organization, because that's how you build up transparency and trust with your colleagues across the organization. You know, you need to follow up and follow through and communicate all the way along. It's so important to communicate and engage with people on what you're hearing from them, but then what you're doing about it. And sometimes you'll need their help to solve some of the problems, because some of our colleagues are much better at solving problems than other people who are a little bit further away. So it's about having open, transparent engagement on an ongoing basis. And I think, you know, you have to be realistic about how much you can change off the back of those insights as well in one go, because, you know, it's an overused phrase, but we all use it. It's definitely a journey we're on, and it will take many, many years for us to remove those pain points for our employees and those irritants, to use a phrase I was using earlier on. So I do think it's possible, but I do think it's going to take time and energy and investment.
Yeah, it's amazing the amount of times I'll talk to someone about employee feedback or, you know, or surveys that an organization will do, and there's no action, you know, there's certainly no perceived action. So I'm very... Yeah. I think you've hit on something there, Barbara. People can do the great bit and ask all the questions, but if they do nothing with that information, it's probably worse than not asking at all.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes it is a perception gap, because we've missed the link on the comms and engagement, to be honest, Declan. Like we need to be better as organizations at telling them we've heard and we're doing and sharing with them on an ongoing basis, you know?
No, I agree. Yeah. I agree. In terms of diversity inclusion as an attraction tool, as a retention tool for existing employees, what's your observations on both employee experience and what candidates are looking for? You know, a lot of companies work a lot on their EVP. How do you guys include it? What are candidates looking for? How does it work for you guys as a retention tool?
Yeah, we're doing a lot of work around our EVP at the moment on telling our story and articulating that a little bit better, so that we can communicate both internally and externally to the market. So your EVP has to truly represent who you are and be authentic. So that's the first thing. But we did a lot of research around our EVP, and we started modeling it out. And very much what was coming through to the core of it was our culture. And very much part of that culture is our diversity, equity and inclusion work that we do. But from my experience of dealing with candidates, some of the stuff, like obviously salary is always going to be a factor, Declan, but other questions I'm getting asked when I'm out meeting potential talent and the market and other organizations is, what are your other benefits? Like I got asked at a recruitment kind of fair there recently, what supports do you provide for people who have children with special needs? And it was brilliant that I was able to point to those Life Matters policies that Mags has talked about and talk about some of the supports we put in place. And, you know, those things are really, really important to people. But the other thing that's very, very important and is becoming more important is the culture of the organization. People want to work in an organization that has a meaningful purpose and that they can connect with that purpose and do meaningful work in an empowered and collaborative way across the organization. So it's really, really important that you have that story to tell if that is your culture. And another factor that's coming out more and more, a recent piece of research, a third of Gen Z are turning down jobs irrespective of the salary because that organization doesn't have a firm ESG agenda and they don't have any kind of, you know, social kind of projects. They're not driving work that kind of supports the greater good. So that's a really important thing that people need to consider. If it's not part of your EVP now, you need to start thinking about that because the Gen Z, they're going to be 27% of the workforce by 2025, which is only a few short years away. So there are some of the things I'm seeing come through our own talent acquisition kind of experience.
I think it's really interesting that, Barbara, because I think organizations still at times, not all organizations obviously, fail to realize that the top talent at an interview, they're interviewing the organization as much, if not more, than the other way around. So I've said it on this podcast before, but like as someone who worked in recruitment, like gone is the day that the big thing on top of your salary was that you got parking in the city center, you know, and that was, you know, sign me up stuff. It's moved on dramatically.
Thankfully. Absolutely. Yeah. You have to do a big sales pitch. All right. When you're having those conversations with potential candidates and you have to put your best foot forward, but obviously you want to sell an authentic picture, as I said, you don't want to. Yeah, so that's really important too.
Yeah. And as a retention, Max.
No, I was just going to jump in to say, like, I think, you know, it's so true. Like, we speak regularly at our induction programs and we give an insight and an overview into D&I. And definitely what we hear from people that have just joined the organization is that they've made career decisions based on the supports that we offer, based on the initiatives that we're running across D&I and the broader agenda. So it very much is a talent attraction tool because people want to work for an organization that prioritizes it.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And is it just sort of a one line answer, is the same attraction tools the same as the retention tools, or is there any difference?
No, sorry, my view, Mags might have a different view, but I think they're the same. And one thing we need to be better at is actually, you know, highlighting the benefits of our organization to our current staff, because we absolutely want to retain the talent that we have. We don't always want to have to go to the market. Now, sometimes if the skill isn't in-house, you might have to, but, you know, our employee workforce, absolutely. We need, they're the same benefits I think they're looking for. And to be honest, our benefits, as Mag said, were derived off the feedback from our current workforce.
Gotcha.
So they've helped inform those benefits.
Yeah, and Declan, that's they're our latest policies that we've introduced, but we also have, you know, a fantastic suite of enhanced parental, paternity leave, sabbaticals, life events leave. So I think, Barbara, we've talked about this a lot, but I think that engagement piece to really ensure that we're getting that message out to potential, but obviously existing employees is really, really important. And we've talked about the power of storytelling, haven't we, Barbara? Like, I think what's really important is hearing stories from our people with lived experience. And I think that's something that we're getting better at in terms of really kind of, you know, that narrative and showing how some of the work that we're doing is really helping people across our organization.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that really brings to life the authenticity of any given, you know, policy or action. So yeah, I can see that for sure. Barbara, sorry, back to you with your employee experience hat on. What do you think is the next big thing in terms of employee experience?
God, all the work I just outlined earlier on, to be honest, the data and technology is work we're going to continue. We're far from finished, either our own organization or other organizations. So enhancing that. But something that's quite exciting that's happening is businesses or some small number of organizations, and I'm started reaching out to them, are starting to overlay employee experience data with customer experience data, which is really, really interesting. And you think about that quote you see from Richard Branson all the time, like if you look after your employees, they'll look after your customers. So it's really interesting to see where the correlation in those pain points for your employees actually correlates to the pain points maybe for your customers. So that's an exciting development that's happening as we speak, and that I'd be really interested to see the outcomes on and investigate further. But the other big thing for me, and from a non-technical perspective, we've talked for, and I talk to Mags about this all the time, I'm probably like a broken record, but we've been talking for the last couple of decades about a coaching style of leadership being, you know, a much more powerful style of leadership whereby you empower people to do meaningful work, you give them the guide rails and you let them get on and do that work, but you put the right supports in place and you coach them through their journey. So that's always been talked about as being a great style of leadership that drives higher productivity and engagement and outcomes for the individuals and the business and growth opportunities. But I think now, and I talked about the changing generation, like 27%, as I said, of Gen Z will make up our workforce by 2025. They are walking away from organizations that don't create that type of culture and environment that lends itself to giving them those growth opportunities. So I think organizations know it's important, but I think it's something organizations will have to tackle a little bit more, fully across the organization and put supports in place for those leaders of today to move them away from being more traditional style of leadership into this more coaching style of leadership. And I read a really interesting article just from flicking on LinkedIn where there was one organization did an experiment and they removed all the managers and put in place coaches, and they gave a coach for every six employee. For six employees, and that their results were amazing. So it is something that I think organizations, we do talk about it and we do invest in it, but we need to invest in it in a more fulsome way, to be quite honest. And I think that's something that's coming and looming. So that is something from my perspective. Yeah, anyway, I don't know.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Mags, anything to add on that one?
I agree with everything that Barbara has said. I think the relationship that you have with your line manager is absolutely crucial and key in terms of that connection with the workplace. So I think a coaching style of leadership is really, really important, and ensuring that we're supporting our line managers in that coaching style of leadership. And we've already talked about senior leader role modeling. But I think across D&I, I think senior leader role modeling is really important, that our senior leaders are role modeling inclusive leadership behaviours, and I suppose building inclusive leadership teams. So yeah, I agree with everything you've mentioned there, Barbara.
Yeah. Mag, sorry, while I have you, for an organisation who maybe are just dipping their toe in, no judgment, but they want to get to a better place, what do you think an organization just starting out or wanting to offer more DEI support to their employees, what advice would you give them based on the journey you guys have been on?
Yeah, sure. So I think for an organization starting out, so recognize where you are in that journey. And I think from the outset, and we've mentioned it a few times now, but data. So gather some data. So look at the demographic of your organization and then see what you can do maybe to address that underrepresentation, or use that data to inform where you might start on your journey. I think seeking feedback from your people is really important. So via your annual engagement survey or some of the surveys that we've mentioned there. Like for example, Barbara and I have just implemented, we're doing a career progression research project for women across our organization. So again, learning some of the barriers that will inform our kind of future initiatives. So I think really seeking that feedback and gathering that data would be something that I think that has worked really well for us in terms of informing our approach. I think developing a clearly articulated strategy with action plans is really important, but also continuing reviewing that and to advance your D&I journey. And then putting in place intentional strategies across recruitment, succession planning. I think get people involved. So, you know, if you can really kind of bring together a D&I task force or D&I champions that will really help you on your journey so that it isn't seen as a HR, an isolated initiative, but rather definitely integrated into the business. So get people involved. And maybe if you're starting out, think about running some education and awareness sessions around inclusive leadership, what it is, maybe what are the barriers to inclusive leadership, by running maybe unconscious bias sessions. But again, I think executive sponsorship is key. So getting your senior leaders involved, and that senior leader accountability, I think setting the tone is really important. If you can, to seek some external partnerships to really inform your approach. That has worked really well with us. We've spent time really investing in getting the right partnerships in place to really inform our approach, to ensure that we're continuing to be data-led and research-led in everything that we do, but also learn from other organisations. Like, this is around, I think, sharing approaches. So reach out, for people starting out, reach out to external networks. There's lots of them out there. We have an inclusion task force across Insurance Ireland, for example. There's the IBAC Diversity Forum. But reach out to other industry providers or organisations that can really share approaches and that you can learn from. Because really, we're all crafting a common approach here. And it's around being selfless and sharing what has worked for us. Because as Barbara said, it's the right thing to do. But maybe lastly, I think what's really important for the future in terms of D&I is shifting from that internal D&I to external D&I. So what are we doing in the community? You know, are our customer propositions and communications, are they crafted with a D&I lens? So I think that external impact is really important for the future. So there's some of the tips, I think, maybe that has been helpful for us as we started out on our journey.
And actually, Mags, I just might just emphasize, I absolutely obviously agree with everything you said, but the seeking help from other organizations, because I'm really conscious there's some small organizations and companies that maybe don't have the budgets, et cetera, to invest in certain partnerships, et cetera. But like actually reaching out to other organizations, people were so willing to help. And they were so open to help. It's like, it's actually quite a nice community being created around this, because I talk to Mags about this all the time. This isn't just about having a great angle to your EVP. This is actually about creating, you know, society that's accessible for all and accepting of all, because that's why we do it. That it's for our children and their children's children. We want to create that more equitable society. And I think people are more than willing to help. Actually, it was quite overwhelming. It was one of the first things I noted when I kind of joined the team. So it's really nice.
Yeah, no, look, excellent advice from both of you there at the end. I think there were some really, really good points. Guys, thanks. You've been so good with your time. Margaret Gribben is Head of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, and Barbara O'Malley, Head of People Experience Ireland for the Irish Life Group. Guys, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks a million, Declan.
Really enjoyed the conversation.
And if anyone would like to know more about Irish Life, they can connect with them on LinkedIn or email corporate.inquiries@irishlifehealth.ie.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.